for the Pledge of Allegiance. Detective Cook, if you can lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Good morning, everyone. Members, good morning. Any comments, thoughts before we begin? Hearing none, I'll turn it over to the director.
Chairman, morning, thank you. I'll just do a quick roll call. It's a little different now that just about everyone's in person, but we'll continue to do it. It's a good thing for our record. Sheriff Daniels in the room.
Here.
Detective Cook in the room. Commander Figueroa, I can see you.
Oh, I can see
you. Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
I can hear everybody. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Johnson's in the room. Ms. Kelly's in the room. Detective Craig's in the room. Deputy Director Bofieri's in the room. Professor Robinson in the room. Colonel Silver in the room. Chief Fusk is in the room. Sir, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Director. You want to go right into your report?
I would. Just a couple things. As you know from the roll call, Chief Williams and Ms. Weiss are unable to make it today. We still have the one vacancy for the large county sheriff. We're still working with the governor's office and the governor's office for boards and commissions to get that position filled. And as soon as I have an update for you, I'll let you know. Monique Cody is your independent advisor for any of our final action cases. And we're going to pull only one case today from our agenda. If you look under new cases, it's 2022-049, Lucas C. Bremerman. And the other thing I'd like to note, the case above that and the case below that are both listed for Mike Delton, but in his absence, Darcy Nichols will be presenting those to you today. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll end my announcements. I apologize. I can go right into, unless anyone has any questions over the announcements, I can go right into my director's report.
Sure.
All right. Just want to cover a couple things. Folks here at Arizona Post have been very, very busy the last month. I just wanted to give you some highlights of some of the things they've done. Rick Van Kieran, I think he's here. I think I saw him there. He's in the back. Rick's on our basic training side, and he has been going through our lesson plans and formatting. And it sounds simple, but our lesson plan format was antiquated, extremely difficult to navigate, and caused us all kinds of headaches. Rick has he took on the project of going through and reformatting all of those. Again, 241 lesson plans that span our basic academy curriculum. Again, it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you saw what he had to do, it was a tremendous amount of work. So I just wanted to publicly recognize him for going above and beyond and making that better for really everyone here in the office, as well as every academy across the state and every instructor. They're all thanking you right now. So since they can't be here to do it, Rick, I want to do it for them. So thank you for your work on that. Some of you went out to an annual qualification demonstration. A sergeant out at Phoenix Regional Academy made some suggestions as in relation to your annual qualification shoot. Looking to make it more realistic to what they're seeing out on the street in officer-involved shootings. So we went down about a month ago and watched it. We invited out all the subject matter expert committee members for firearms and invited some board members down to take a look at it, to see what you think. I thought the demonstration went well. I like it. I think it really does demonstrate proficiency for what officers are encountering on the street. We're just soliciting feedback from all our subject matter expert groups and our committee members. And we'll bring back some type of recommendation, maybe to make a change in the future to that annual qualification. The other things the basic training group have been doing, they went up to Flagstaff last week and met with, as the new trend now is regional police academies. So Flagstaff, Coconino County area wants to start a regional police academy. The team is really, Lori and her team are really good about going out there, sitting down with them, discussing what it takes to open an academy, and then working with them behind the scenes to make it successful. So that, I think, is our fourth one from Aaron, you guys. That's about our fourth one in the hopper now, where people are trying to really start the process of starting their own academy. So we'll keep you apprised. Obviously, you have the ultimate authority on who can start an academy, but we'll work them through the process to make sure that at least when we present their ideas to you, that they meet all the qualifications. And we'll keep you updated as that goes along. Advanced training has also been busy. Chuck Miller, I don't think, is here today, but he's been working with the COPS office. I'm not sure if you're aware, but they have a very robust online portal. I was in my connection with IADALIS. I was on a meeting with them a couple months ago, and they were discussing that. They were asking for our buy-in from the regional directors around the country. And I thought that's a great idea. Why not leverage their technology, leverage their training for peace officers in Arizona? So Chuck's been working with them. We now have a link on our website that any officer in the state can click on, go on, and we've already vetted 50, I think, of their hundreds of classes that would be available for continuing training credit. They're free, they're timely, and they're really well done. So it's just a really good strategic partnership that, again, thinks it makes it better for Arizona law enforcement on the whole. Because as you know, in today's environment with manpower and funding, they have the ability for someone to get training while in briefing, or even they can do it on MDC if they're in a safe location. I think it's exponentially better for us as the law enforcement community, as well as the individual agencies. A couple other things, ACOP training. For those of you who weren't at the ACOP meeting last month, Chuck provided an hour and a half of continuing training on learned optimism. We got rave reviews from the chiefs that attended, and we continue to do that every meeting they have quarterly. We offer to do a training, one and a half hour training just up leading up to the meeting. And again, we're getting really good participation from that. And as you know, every year at the summit, which is next month in Flagstaff, Arizona Post provides a 4-hour training on Thursday morning for all the attendees. That is 4 hours of continuing training. So we've set that up with a gentleman by the name of Eric Kowalczyk. He was the PIO in Baltimore during the Freddie Gray incident. And he talks about planning for that worst day, making sure you're prepared for that worst day in your agency's history. So he's taught at our ELP class. He's really dynamic. He gets rave reviews, and we're excited to be able to host that training on your behalf in July. Compliance, we've talked about that. You know, when I first started here, we had 6 compliance officers, 1 compliance manager. Now we have 2 managers, and as of right now, we have 5 compliance specialists on each side. Our 2 new people, Tim and Darren, are accelerated in their training. We anticipated in August, September, putting them on their own. Now I think they're looking for July. Darren is ready to go, so is Tim. So we'll have them out, and we're going to redo, as you know, our compliance specialists are assigned to we used to do them geographically, and then they'd have about 20 to 30 agencies. With the addition of the 2, we're going to get them down to 15 to 16 agencies each and make sure we're spreading the workload over the 10 of them. And that'll allow them to have better connectivity to those agencies and be more responsive to new hire audits as well as compliance cases. If you've been noticing your agendas, our new cases are getting to you much quicker. Our final actions are getting to you much quicker than they have historically, and that's due to the work they're doing on a daily basis. So, again, thank you for your support in allowing us to continue to hire. I think we're done hiring now. I think we have the right mix, and I think we're really operating very efficiently. So thank you for your support on that. Just a couple miscellaneous items. I've kept you up to date over the last couple years, our relationship with the Navajo Nation Department of Public Safety. That's an issue. They have their own academy. It's not state certified by us or by you, and they're not using our new hire audits. And so there's a whole host of issues we've been dealing with. They have a new chief now. He was their number 2. Now he's their chief, Daryl Noon. He reached out to me about 2 months ago and asked, hey, we'd like to repair a relationship. How do we go about that? I was really excited. I said, let's meet. He offered to drive down here. I said, hey, how about we split the difference? And we met in Flagstaff. So last month, I went up with Lori Scott, Lori Way, Sean Donegan, and Rich Bradshaw. We drove up there, met with them, had a really good meeting, shared a lot of really good ideas. They want to work with us. We have offered anything they want to help them get back into a state-run or state-approved academy. I was very excited about that. They have, Sean reminded me, it was about 220 officers, and they said about 70 of them or 80 of them, and my numbers could be a little off, aren't currently state certified, but the other group are, and we're just making sure, one, they stay certified by making sure they meet their training, their shooting, all our obligations, but we'd love to get those other folks back through the fold, so we're just working on what that looks like in the future for them, as well as it'll look like for future graduates from their academy, because they're running at least 1 class, if not 2 classes a year. So again, I was really encouraged by them reaching out, and hopefully I will continue to keep you updated. Hopefully we'll continue to repair that relationship. Law Matters radio show. I routinely get calls to come on and talk to the media. I got a call from a woman who runs a nonprofit out of Tucson. She hosts a weekly show on Saturday morning live called Law Matters Radio. I drove down the end of May, and I was a guest on her show. Who knew I could talk for an hour on a live radio show? But it was really good. It was really nice to go down there and share your vision to her audience, as well as all the things you guys do on a daily basis to make law enforcement better in the state of Arizona. So it was fun. Unfortunately, I'm the one that gets to go out and get the accolades for all the work you guys do and the direction you guys give us. But it was a fun adventure. I know Sheriff Daniels knows Sherry, and it was a good experience. And I think she emailed me later and said she got a lot of really positive feedback on the message we were delivering. So thank you for allowing me to go do that on your behalf. Just a few more things. Officer safety and wellness with IACP, I've talked about that. I've been on that committee for the last year and a half. COVID really slowed us down. The curriculum's done. We offered up PERPA. Jerry Williams was nice enough to agree. Next Friday, they're flying people out from IACP, as well as the basic training staff, and Chuck from our advanced training staff are going to put on an 8-hour officer safety and wellness to 2 academy classes down at PERPA. It's the very first one. Dale's going to film it for us. And then they're going to make some tweaks, host it again next month in Denver, and then they're going to push it out nationally. It's a really good curriculum. It covers financial wellness, physical wellness. It discusses officer suicides. It's really, really well done. A lot of thought went into it, and I'm really excited to see how it goes next Friday, and I'll update you next month on what the feedback is, because we'll be doing a survey with the recruits on what they thought, and I'll also be curious to hear from the instructors who are going to teach it for the first time what their thoughts are on the curriculum. But again, I thank you again for allowing me to participate with the IACP on that endeavor. A State Bar of Arizona conference on June 27th. I was asked to be on a panel discussion for Brady and Beyond. They want to talk about how Brady impacts. So there'll be a prosecutor, a defense attorney, Elizabeth Ortiz from APAC, and myself will be presenting to this organization Monday, June 27th. And the last thing is the strategic plan for 2022 through 2025. Again, it's always nice to have a roadmap where you want to go, where you want to be in 2025. So thank goodness we brought on Chuck Miller, who loves strategic plans. So he's been working diligently on it. The draft is complete. We sent out an agency head survey about 3 weeks ago. We just extended it. We sent out a reminder yesterday. We're soliciting feedback from agency heads on how this will impact them and any input they have. And then hopefully by next month, we will push out to you the final draft of the Arizona Post strategic plan, which, to my knowledge, Arizona Post is never done. I had never seen one. I've never seen a historic one. So this is a milestone for us and something I think is very important for our future growth and continued success. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I know I talked a lot, but I will end my director's report. I just want to make sure that you're aware of all the good work in your name that these folks are doing on a daily basis. Again, with a little bit of bias, I think this is probably the most effective, most engaged, and most efficient Arizona Post has ever been. So again, with that, I'm happy to take any questions anyone might have.
Director, staff, thank you all. I will say this, in my time on this board, I'm very impressed with what's being done and where we were and where we're at today. So thank you all sitting in the room that makes that difference. Any other comments from members? Hearing none, thank you, Director. We'll move on. Next agenda item will be the consent agenda. Unless there's any comments, I'd entertain a motion. Anyone?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson, make a motion we approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, Professor.
Second,
Chief. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, there you are, man. I was like, where'd that come from? any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next agenda item E, the University of Arizona waiver request by applicant Paula Bellafoss. Mr. Breckham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a petition being presented by Ms. Rolney, who is a vice president at the University of Arizona. The applicant is Ms. Paula Bellafoss. She is in the hiring process to become the chief of police at the University of Arizona. Ms. Bellafoss, however, is unable to successfully complete the POPAT. Ms. Rolney describes the work restrictions placed on Ms. Bellafoss in the event that she becomes the police chief. Specifically, Ms. Bellafoss will not place herself in a situation likely to result in the use of physical force. Ms. Rolney is present remotely to address the board. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Director. Good morning, ma'am. I will yield the board to you.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to address the board today. We are incredibly excited to have Paula Bellafoss join the University of Arizona We had a highly competitive national search, and she came to us from the University of Colorado Boulder. We are asking for a waiver of the PROCAD, but I want to start off by saying that Paula is an incredibly physically fit person, individual. There are only two segments of the PROCAD that she is having difficulty completing, the scaling a 6-foot wall and dragging the 165-pound, I don't know if you call it a dummy or a body, a simulation, and we believe that due to the unique circumstances of her role here at University of Arizona, it is highly unlikely that she would ever be in the circumstance where she would have to complete either of those tasks. The position here at U of A is an assistant vice president and the chief of police, sits on the president's cabinet. She's a member of the senior leadership team. She works on a daily basis with students and with various departments across the campus. For the vast majority of her time, she will not be in the field. She will be working with in a leadership role on campus. I'd like to share that we found Paula to be the ideal team player during the national search. She's humble, hungry, and people smart, and very lucky. She's been deeply committed, and she has been well received by the University of Arizona Police Department, as well as other members of the community. So again, we're asking for a waiver either of the full PROCAD or just these two components. And given her length of service, she's been in law enforcement for over 35 years, her rank and the likelihood that she will not be put in a position where she would have to do either of these two things, I would like to ask for your approval to waive those components.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions for the Vice President? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion or discussion if that needs to happen.
I've got a question for Matt.
Yeah.
So, it's my understanding, for instance, if we have somebody we hire from another agency within Arizona, we can waive the physical fitness test. If we're bringing in somebody at an executive level or a lateral, mandatory tests are the physical, is my understanding, and the polygraph, right?
Yeah, and so. Yeah, you're actually correct. But since Chief Balafest is coming from another state, she's considered a new applicant and has to do the entire new hire process
to get Arizona certified. That's
correct.
The issue, right? But in reading the letter, when I read the letter, it alluded to the fact that she wasn't going to take law enforcement action ever. I mean, should they just be looking for a waiver from the POPAT test? Or this is almost stating she would be in a limited role law enforcement.
Yeah, no, I can see. No, what they're asking for is really a restricted status. And this board has done that historically, usually for command-level people, positions who aren't out actively enforcing the law on a daily basis. So they're asking for a restricted status. So her restriction would be the POPAT. I firmly believe that Chief Balafest in the future will come back and rectify this, be able to pass the POPAT. And there's no obligation for her to do so, but I've spoken to her several times. I, too, am very impressed with her. I talked to her before the process. I've talked to her since she's been hired. This would just be a restricted status, Colonel. I hope that answered your question.
I think really what I was getting at is, could they have just applied to get a waiver for the POPAT or no?
That is in essence what they're doing. That is exactly in essence what they're doing. They're asking for a waiver from that to get to give her a restricted status. That's a really good question. Can you get I think I see what you're saying now.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Can the board just waive the POPAT as part of the hiring process instead of giving her a restricted status? That's a great question. I guess I didn't pick it up at first. Sorry.
Colonel, good morning. Mark Brachtel with the Attorney General's Office. The potential motion states just that in this circumstance, Ms. Balafest has not yet passed other aspects of the certification process. To my understanding, there's other steps she is still proceeding through, and the request is for a very narrow request, strictly for POPAT. So that's how the motion is framed. that the board does have the authority to waive the requirement of the POPAT for purposes of her continued certification process.
Any further comment, questions? Not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, based upon the information submitted by the University of Arizona Business Affairs Section and pursuant to Rule 13-4-103G, I move that the board waive the POPAT test portion in the certification process on applicant Ms. Paula Balapas.
Thank you, Chief. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Jamie. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Vice President. Congratulations. Next agenda item, F, AZ Post budget for FY 2022-2023. Director, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is a very unique year. For those of you who've been following what's going on in the state, it is now June 15th and the state budget has not been approved. So Lynn, I don't think, she is in here. We discussed this about a month ago and we said, well, we have to get the budget to the board before no later than the June meeting, so we're ready to go July 1st. Well, we don't know what the budget's gonna be yet because it hasn't been done yet. So a proposed budget's come out, but let me go back. As you know, there's a bill that's still waiting in the State House that will move us from CJEF funding to appropriated funding. So we're just assuming, and I've been told when the budget gets passed, that'll happen. So we will move out of CJEF funding in this upcoming fiscal year. So what I asked Lynn to do, and we talked about it, is to just use that number. They gave a $5 million figure. Use that as our revenue for the upcoming fiscal year and just factor in our normal expenses. And that's what Lynn did. In addition, we've been tracking, historically, Arizona Post has always been aligned with DPS as far as pay raises go for our employees. So I've been tracking what DPS was proposing and what their FOP was proposing, what the talk was down at the legislature. And what I had heard was it was gonna more likely be a 10% raise across the board for DPS employees. So I asked Lynn to include that in the budget proposal that's in front of you today. Now, things are changing. If you move forward, if you look at the proposed budget that came out last week, not only did they give us our $5 million, they also included $1.1 million additional dollars, and that's tied back to the 207 funding for academy reimbursements that they told me last year they weren't going to give us. So it appears they're going to give us the $5 million for our normal operating fund, plus $1.1 million, which will allow us to continue reimbursing academies for each successful graduate, which will make most sheriffs, all chiefs, and all the academies very happy, because it was going to be very confusing trying to parse out that 207 funding. So that's what it looks like. But then you also look at the budget, that I think it's a line item above or below, it talks about DPS employees, a 15% raise across the board for both civilian and sworn. So I'm going to ask you for two motions, if you will. The first motion I ask you is take a look at the budget, and if you agree with it, and you to make a motion to approve the budget as presented, which includes a 10% raise. I'd ask for a second motion that says, should DPS civilian employees, and I want to make sure that is very clear, is we tie ourselves to civilian employees at DPS, not sworn employees, because we recognize there's a difference. So all I ask is if DPS civilian employees get more than 10%, that we match whatever DPS civilian employees get in the budget once it's approved. So again, I'm asking for two different motions on this one issue. But with that, I mean, you have all the documents in here. It's broken down by each one of our work areas. And I'm happy to answer any questions the board might have. I can also tell you, there's always been a question about us. In CJEF funds, we have carryover funds, and we've been very judicious and very, I believe, fiscally sound on how we spend our money. And as you see, as we end this fiscal year, the end of this month, we'll carry over a balance of $4.2 million. We've done that through vacancy savings. We've done that through just making very smart decisions. And we can afford either a 10 or a 15% raise. Our budget will allow for that without cutting positions, without having to cut back on any services we provide to our our partners. So again, we're in a position where we could do either the 10 or the 15. And again, I just ask you for both of those motions if you're agreeable to that. But again, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about our budget if anyone has any.
Thank you, Director. Questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Director.
Is the request for the board to approve your budget presented under the auspices that you would continue CJF funding versus legislative appropriation in the event that it changes to legislative appropriated budget? Will you represent a budget to us that, because your budget may be, it's often not in your control if it's coming from the legislature, so it could be vastly different than what you're presenting once the budget is passed.
Oh, that's a great question, sir. We did it based on the $5 million amount that is in that bill that is parked waiting for the budget to be approved, and that appears to be what they put in the appropriated proposed budget that I saw last week. It also at $1.1 million. So yeah, if it did change drastically or we for some reason weren't, because we're assuming, a budget assumes we're going into appropriated funding July 1st with that $5 million plus the $1.1 for Academy reimbursements. That's what the budget you have in front of you shows. Should that not occur and we stay in CJEF funding, we will represent a budget. The money will be very similar. It'll just be coming from different funding sources. But it's about on average about maybe a $200,000 difference. So 4.8 to 5 million should we go from CJEF or appropriate back to CJEF funding, because we budget $400,000 a month in CJEF funding. And it goes up and down depending on the month. Right now, we're averaging, this year we'll end an average at $397,000 for the year. So we almost hit our target, almost right on the nose.
And the CGF funding, CGF funding is not contingent upon the legislature passing a budget. And part of my
That's correct. Is
the logic is in any way are we usurping the legislature by approving a budget contingent upon them passing a budget?
No, absolutely not, because the money, you're giving us the ability to spend the money. We'll have it one way or the other. It'll either be CJEF or appropriated funding. Does that make sense? Because CJEF has nothing to do with the legislature. If they don't pass that bill removing us from CJEF, CJEF's already there. It's already, that mechanism's already been there, and it's been there for 20 years or longer.
Director, don't we have to, and maybe it's a legal question for Mr. Rechtel or maybe Monica, don't we have to have the word tentative is the key here.
Correct.
Tentative budget before July 1 anyway. Is that correct?
We do.
This body.
Yeah, and if anything did change, I'll bring it back in July and we'll represent it for further consideration. But we just need to have something ready to go for July 1st.
Sounds good.
Any other questions?
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion for the first one.
Jamie Kelly, I move that the fiscal year 2022-23 easy post budget be approved as presented.
Thank you, Jamie. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, see guys saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. I come back and ask for a second motion reference to the equality, the parity within the for the states for DPS surveillance. So
I recuse myself.
Yeah. Make the record note, Director, Colonel. Any discussion? If not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that should the fiscal year 22-23 budget pass with a raise for DPS employees in alignment with that transcending to AZ Post employees, that there be alignment with that specified increase in pay, parity, if you will, for AZ Post employees. Does that cover, Mr. Brechtel,
what you're
seeking?
Thank you, Director. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Jamie. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, everybody. All righty. Moving on. Agenda item G. Rule violations committed by peace officers when their certification is inactive. Director, back to you.
Mr. Chairman, just let me know when you're tired of hearing me talk. I apologize.
No, that's good.
This is a unique situation, and it's come up a couple times now, and that's why we're coming back to the board for clarification. and it involves officers whose certification is considered inactive. And I in your board packet, I gave you an example, and that's just one example. But let me just, for the record, let me just explain what we're talking about. So when someone is appointed, after they've met the minimum qualifications, gone through an academy, whatever it might be, and they're appointed to an agency, their status in our system shows active. That remains active as long as they're in good standing until they separate employment, whether it's a retirement, resignation, whatever. From that date of separation, when that agency notifies us that person left employment, your certification goes inactive. So the board has jurisdiction when someone's active. The board has jurisdiction when their certification is inactive. If they don't go back to another law enforcement agency in 36 months, their certification now becomes lapsed and you lose jurisdiction over their certification. The question becomes is, how much oversight do you want on their certifications when they're in an inactive status? An example I gave you in here, an officer is worked 4 or 5 years for an agency, decides they want to go do something else for a career, they leave in good standing, no issues, they go off to work. While they're off at work in this new profession, they think there's going to be the rest of their life, they decide to do something that would be an Arizona Post rule violation. And in this case, I'll use a minimum qualification standard, they decide to ingest recreationally legal marijuana. Now fast forward 6 months, what they went to, like you say, the grass isn't always greener. They think, you know what, police work's a good job, I'd really like to go back. They go back to their other agencies, like, oh, we'd love to hire you again, we need to redo your background pack and all that. Oh, you use marijuana. Well, by your rule, they have to wait 2 years from their last use to the date of application, right? No problem, that's crystal clear in our rules. What's not clear is when during that 6 month period that they were gone, their certification was still inactive. You still have jurisdiction over them. They committed an Arizona Post rule violation that had they been working in an agency and got caught using marijuana, that's a revocation case that would come before you for using drugs. However, they're not working as a law enforcement officer. They just happen to have an inactive certification. The rules are not as clear on how we address those. So as we started looking in that case, we said, no, you got to wait 2 years. But then we had started a further conversation is, should we be looking at them committing acts that are in violation of our rules while we still, the board, still has jurisdiction over their certification? So that's where we're coming to you. Again, what I've learned since I've been here, it's nice to have clarification. We want, again, I'm really big and consistent. I want to make sure we're treating everyone consistently. The best way we do that is through a rule change. I don't think this necessarily needs a rule change. I think this needs a substantive policy on this is how the board interprets what we should do with someone's certification during that inactive status. And that's why I agendized it, because I wanted to have this discussion to get all of your, I have my own, I think we kind of have our own opinions, but want to know from the board how you would want us to treat those individuals during their inactive status when it comes to our attention in a new, when they're trying to get, in essence, a new hire audit. And I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Thank you, Director. Questions, comments?
Yeah, I'll comment on it. Well, two things. One, we obviously take the certification seriously. We have people here relinquish their certification for periods of 6 months, 18 months, whatever the case may be. And during that period of time, if they do something wrong, we would take it seriously. The issue is going to be is how does it come back into our system? How do we hear about it unless they're going to reapply for a job? Let's say they don't ever reapply for a job and it lapses, then it's really of no consequence and it's not necessarily an issue to us. But how does it come to our attention? So absent somebody reapplying to be in law enforcement, really the only way would be is if somebody uses marijuana or whatever it is they do, because we're just using marijuana in this case, it could be some other violation in another case, somebody would possibly have to report to AZ Post, hey, I was at a party and I saw this person do this, or I was in an event and saw somebody do that. Then it comes to our attention. Then a complaint would have to come forward, a formal complaint would have to come forward before we'd even hear a case such as that, which I think would be almost anomalous in that sense, because I don't think we've ever had a case come before us like that. So it's only going to come about if they're reapplying for a job, right, for the most part.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I want to say, and Ben, maybe you can help me here, we've had a case that has come to us for someone that was inactive, where it was behavior was reported to us, and we've opened a case on their certification.
Yeah, we've had a criminal case.
Billy Paul, one of your compliance specialists, it was a, my recollection, he was an officer from Ah Chin, or Gila River, I can't remember which, he retired, was then arrested by Phoenix PD for the person named police officer. He pled guilty to the felony, and obviously that's an automatic revocation for the board. And that came to us essentially through like a third party or an officer that he had worked with, but it was more like a citizen's complaint.
So he was inactive because he wasn't actually working anymore. But I think you're correct, sir. It's rare. It doesn't happen often.
Okay, but that just answered the question. That really answered the question before it even needed to be asked. Then we would take the case and we would hear it and we would act on it. So during that 3-year period of time, you make a bad decision, then you made a decision you don't want to work in law enforcement anymore. And if you do, you're going to have to go through a waiver process or go through a process to get hired and whatnot, and that's it. I mean, that's the integrity of the system. This just answered it to me.
Any other comments? I would concur. There's a reason that rule's in place. It's you have governance over this board, the staff here, and we don't make the decisions. We just hold people accountable in a fair and partial way. So I agree with the director on that one, the colonel.
Well, then, if you're so inclined, I would like if we could do a motion, and then we will draft what we call a substantive policy, just so if none of us are here in 5 years, it's very clear that the board gave direction on this date, that this is how we're going to handle those cases. And we'll write that up, and we'll bring it back next month for your review, just to make sure it meets what you wanted to meet, and then we will publish it.
I'd gladly make a motion. I'm not exactly sure how you articulate this motion.
I think it's actually in your book.
Thank you. I appreciate that. My former field training sergeant over here.
Still at it.
I move that a substantive policy statement be created to address rule violations committed by peace officers when their certification is inactive.
Thank you, Colonel. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Chief. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All the folks that say nay, chair votes aye, motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Next agenda item, H, first case will be final action case 2021-124. Mr. Duran, over to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. At this time, the state wishes to withdraw the motion to amend the complaint. The respondent is represented by Ms. Cassidy Bacon, who is present, and I believe she has no objection to my withdrawing of the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Counsel, good morning.
Good morning. That's correct.
No objection. I didn't think there would be. Any comments, questions from board? Do we need a motion if you're going to pull it, Monique?
No, you do not need a motion on that.
I wouldn't think so. So that case is striked, correct? We're done? All righty.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, just to let you know, this is just an example of the work these folks do on a daily basis. As we continually look at these cases, we're continually looking at the facts, we're open to suggestions, we're open to, and we roundtable all these cases. And again, this is just something that at the end, Mr. Duran just came to us and said, hey, I think we should withdraw this. We all sat down, looked at the evidence, and we agreed with them. So thank you for your patience in bringing this forward.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Duran. Thank you. Awesome. All righty, next case, moving on. Case number 2021-075. Mr. Duran, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Arizona Post staff and the respondent, Julian Navarette, offer the attached consent agreement for your review and approval. Respondent is currently employed by the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. He is represented by attorney Dennis Fitzgibbons, who I believe is appearing virtually.
Yes, I'm on the phone. Thanks.
I'm December 5th, 2020, a respondent was off duty and driving his personal vehicle in Tempe. On that date, an Arizona State University Police Department officer pulled him over for a traffic violation. That traffic stop led to a subsequent DUI investigation. During the investigation, preliminary breath test indicated a blood alcohol level of 0.147. During the course of the DUI investigation, respondent was extremely rude and uncooperative with the arresting officer and continually identified himself as a peace officer. Respondent was charged with DUI and eventually pled guilty to an amended count of reckless driving in the Justice Court. The parties to the consent agreement agree that respondent's actions are in violation of post rules, specifically 13.4109A8 and 12. The parties propose that the board suspend respondent's peace officer certification for a period of 12 months with the effective dates as listed in the agreement. This proposal is within the range, pardon me, of permissible discipline for officers that have committed similar misconduct. And I'm happy to answer any factual questions or refer you to your independent legal advisor.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Counselor, would you wish to speak on this, Mr. Fitzgibbons? If I said your name right.
Yes, sir, you did. Mr. Director, no, if the board has questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I think it was presented fairly. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Duran, I do have a question. Why the separation in dates for the recommended here, for this agreement? Is there a reason for that?
I can answer that question. I'll let the Attorney General do it, but he's already served a two-week suspension at work.
That's precisely the reason, sir, and it'll come up again in another agreement where the board is giving the respondent credit for the time he served a previous suspension.
Okay, thank you to both. Any questions, comments from board members?
I have one. I'm good with the retroactive things on some of these suspensions. We've done that before, but my question is, we've had a couple of these DUI cases come up, and you know, if it's DUI, it's DUI. I won't get into that whole issue. My issue comes when the people are uncooperative or they're giving a headache to the arresting officer or agency. I think that takes on a different tenor. And that's, I think we saw a video on this one, if I'm not mistaken. And it was pretty belligerent. And I think we've had cases such as this before, and this is, I guess my question would be, this is pretty lenient. It's a 12-month suspension, and it's retroactive, right?
Most of it is retroactive.
Most of it's prospective.
Okay.
Do you know what the AC was?
Okay. I just would like to be as close to consistent. I understand each case is like a fingerprint. They're unique, but I'd like to be consistent on some of these cases. My level of tolerance for people who are in law enforcement, who are belligerent to another law enforcement officer, is very narrow.
Now, Colonel, I agree, and we do staff all these cases, and we look at all the facts. And in this case, with the fact pattern we had, and I don't have the BAC in front of me, but I believe based on the BAC, based on his belligerent attitude, we felt like a year was right in the permissible range of what we've given other people for very similar fact patterns. But I share your same concerns.
It was a 147.
So there you go. It was a 147, which technically would put it where the board wouldn't even normally see this case. It's coming before you because of the aggravating factors of his behavior.
We had a Gilbert Mesa case like this too, right? Gilbert PD arrest, Mesa PD.
That sounds familiar, but
What was the result of that?
If I may, Colonel Mark Brechtel, that's coming up down the pipeline, another consent agreement, and the parties agree to an 18-month suspension. And that's a off-duty officer driving his personal vehicle, hits a tree, he's in his neighborhood, and he walks home, and
there's that case, and I know that one's coming up. I'm talking about the one that happened about 4 years ago.
Don't recall.
Okay. All right.
I can track it down if you like.
I just want to be somewhat consistent.
I think we are. I think we do a really good job. The board does a really good job of being consistent.
Any other comments, questions? If not, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for an 18-month suspension of Mr. Guzman's peace officer certification. The dates of suspension will be those that are listed on the consent agreement.
Are you looking 12 months? You said 18 months.
Here, all right, I'll take yours. Mr. Chair, I scratched my previous motion amended to read, I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for a 12-month suspension of Mr. Navarette's peace officer certification retroactively beginning February 20th, 2022, ending March 5th, 2022, and prospectively beginning June 20th, 2022, and ending May 20th, 2023.
Thank you, Director. Do I hear a second?
Mr. Chairman, Chief Voskis, I second.
Thank you, Chief. Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion,
signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next case, 2021-123. Mr. Durant, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Arizona Post staff and the respondent, Peter Guzman, offered the attached consent agreement for your review and approval. Respondent is currently employed by the Phoenix Police Department. He is represented by Attorney Cassidy Bacon. Both the respondent and counsel are present. This consent agreement covers misconduct committed by the respondent on two separate occasions. First, on February 6, 2020, respondent conducted a traffic stop of a vehicle he observed speeding. During the traffic stop, the driver provided his driver's license to respondent when requested, but could not provide registration and insurance documents. The respondent detained the driver in handcuffs for failing to provide these insurance and registration documents, but later told his supervisor that he had detained the driver for failure to provide identification, which was not true. Respondent also failed to properly impound marijuana located in the vehicle as required by policy and failed to properly complete a departmental report. The second incident occurred on June 13th, 2021. Also in 2020. While respondent was off duty and driving his personal vehicle in Gilbert. On that date, a Gilbert Police Department officer pulled him over for several traffic violations. The traffic stop led to a DUI investigation, which revealed respondent's blood alcohol level was 0.236. Respondent was convicted of extreme DUI in the Gilbert Municipal Court. The parties to the consent agreement agree that respondent's actions are in violation of post rules, specifically 13.4109.88 and 12. The parties propose that the board suspend respondent's peace officer certification for a period of 18 months with the effective dates as listed in the agreement. And once again, the reason for the confusing series of dates is to give the respondent credit for time that he served a prior suspension from the Phoenix Police Department. This proposal is within the range of permissible discipline for peace officers who have committed similar misconduct, and I am happy to answer any factual questions.
Thank you, Mr. Duran. Questions for Mr. Duran? If not, Ms. Bacon, would you like to speak?
I would. Thank you.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Cassidy Bacon. I'm here on behalf of my client, Peter Guzman, who is was seated right next to me. The facts in this case are as Mr. Durant explained. I do, however, want to clarify just a couple of things that I don't think are entirely clear in the agreement. First, although PSB did sustain an allegation that my client provided an untruthful statement to his sergeant, when the sergeant was actually interviewed, he explained that he did not think Officer Guzman was lying. He had a very junior squad at the time. I think my client had just over 2 years as a solo officer at the time. And the sergeant had been working with all of those officers on better articulating their justifications for stops, detentions, and arrests. He had explained that in this situation, all the statements that were made by Officer Guzman were in response to his kind of prodding questions. And he felt that those statements were due to kind of an inarticulate explanation and not an intentional, any sort of intent to deceive him. So I did want to be clear about that. Second, although my client did have the DUI conviction, that was the result of a plea agreement, so I wanted to be clear on that. Peter Guzman at all times took full responsibility for his actions. I've watched the body camera footage of the stop and the arrest. He was nothing but respectful. He cooperated fully with the investigating officers. He did not pull out his badge. He didn't so much as identify himself as a police officer until he was specifically asked. He pleaded guilty to the DUI. He cooperated fully with Phoenix's internal investigation. He acknowledged to them that he made a serious mistake. He also accepted his suspension, which was the maximum allowable under Phoenix policy. He did not appeal that suspension. On his own, he participated in crisis counseling and group meetings in order to be able to better handle the stressors of the job. He took steps to ensure that he would never be in this position again, that he would never get behind the wheel after drinking again. So my client's prepared to accept a consent agreement as written. This has been a very long process, and he's anxious to put this behind him and move forward. I do, however, think it's important for the board to understand a few things about what's happened since the DUI arrest. As you're well aware, departments are only required to send an officer's file for review when there's an actual separation of employment. In this case, that did not occur. But Phoenix, I believe, is the only agency to send most of their suspensions to post for review. They send all class 2 and class 3 violations, which are start at 24 hours and go up to 240 hours. So had this case occurred with most other agencies with the same policy, we wouldn't likely be here. In any event, once the DUI occurred, Phoenix did immediately remove him from an enforcement position. This is common with any disciplinary investigation. But in this case, my client stayed in a non-enforcement position even after the investigation was completed and his discipline was served. That's not common. The reason for that was in part because his post case was pending. Departments know that extreme DUIs will generally result in a suspension of their certification. And generally, if an officer certification is suspended, the agency has the ability to transfer that officer to a non-enforcement position to serve out the suspension. My client's been in a non-enforcement position since June 14th of 2020. He's been performing alongside civilian investigators in the Property Crimes Bureau, performing the exact same job as them. He's not permitted to take any enforcement action whatsoever. So had this agreement been entered into when Post first got this case, all of this time he's been working would have counted towards his suspension. The lieutenant who supervised my client for the majority of his current assignment wrote a letter in support. That is Lieutenant Brian Hanania. I know that Lieutenant Hanania emailed it to your executive director, who indicated that it would be provided to the board. So I'm assuming that you all have that. If not, I do have copies. So because of these unique circumstances, I asked Post's attorney for the ability to leave open the issue of retroactivity. I was told that was not a possibility, but I do think that this case is unique in all the ways that I've just described. My client's remorse, his cooperation, his acceptance of responsibility, his actions to better himself, his reassignment to the non-enforcement position. So I've never asked this board to impose a retroactive suspension for an officer that's still working. Normally, that's just not a possibility because they are taking enforcement action. And as I stated at the beginning, my client is prepared to accept, I think after the time credits the suspension, it's just over 14 months prospective. But I do believe that if this board finds that a retroactive suspension would be appropriate under these unique circumstances, it does have the ability to reject the consent agreement as written and enter into a new one. All Mr. Guzman wants is the ability to do the job that he loves to do. He wants to continue protecting and serving his community in Phoenix as a Phoenix police officer. If the board would allow it, he is here and would like to make a statement and also answer any questions that you may have of him. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Bacon. Any questions for Ms. Bacon? Thank you, Counselor. Mr. Guzman, would you like to say a few things?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for giving this opportunity to speak. I wrote a personal letter that I'll read to you guys now. So my name is Peter J. Guzman. I'm a police officer with the Phoenix Police Department. I've been a police officer for 5 years as of this month. I'm writing this letter on behalf in hopes to explain myself for an event that took place on June 13th, 2020. On that date, late in the night, I made the biggest mistake of my life, and that was getting behind the wheel while being intoxicated and attempting to drive home. I put others in danger, and there's no excuse for that, especially as someone who took an oath to uphold the law. That night of June 13th, 2020, Gilbert Police Department arrested me for a DUI that I was later charged for on a later date. That night, I had to make the horrific call to my supervisor at the time and tell him the news. The following day, I was unassigned from my regular patrol assignment and placed in a non-enforcement position, and have been in a non-enforcement position since that day. I'm currently assigned to the Property Crimes Bureau and helping the Financial Crimes Detail. Since June 13th, I have completed many life-changing events and acted in bettering myself mentally and physically to promise myself, my family, and others that I will never make that same mistake again. When I got my DUI and returned to work, I took immediate action in the Craig Tiger Act law, in which I began counseling classes with Dr. Dara. The Craig Tiger Act and Dr. Dara helped me in the darkest time of my life. I also took action at work with the City of Phoenix Employee Assistance Unit and began counseling with them to speak to the chaplain. During this time, the men that I spoke to helped me and guided me in the right direction to get back on my feet and where I am today in life. During the time of the counseling, I also enrolled myself in a crisis preparation and recovery. I attended multiple meetings twice a week with counselors, and Gilbert Municipal Courthouse directed me to taking courses and getting hours in with Alcohol Anonymous meetings. I have completed 36 hours of Stonewall Institute alcohol rehab services. Since taking all these courses and multiple counseling sessions, I made myself a goal during these times and completed a physical and mental challenge called 75 Hard by Andy Frisella. All I want to do is be able to move forward in my career that I love and continue to protect and serve the Phoenix community. My actions that night have prevented me from doing that for the last 2 years. But it was a wake-up call, and I stand here today reading this letter and telling you the steps I've taken in order to demonstrate that I take full accountability and responsibility for my actions. I've done everything in my power and will to be able to stand here today and tell you with absolute certainty that I will never make that same decision again. If you allow me to go back to being a Phoenix police officer, I can promise you here that I will always do what is expected of a sworn officer, both on and off duty. And I can promise you that you will never see my name on this board's agenda again. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Guzman. Hold on just for a second. Any questions for the officer?
I was curious why the cases are stacked. Why we have two cases here on them.
When the case was presented by the compliance specialist, Mr. Dell, he combined them, the two cases into one case, so I resolved them as one case.
So, what was the status of the integrity case with regard to the DUI case? In other words, what status was he in with the integrity case? What was the status of that at Phoenix PD when he had the DUI case?
It was pending investigation, sir.
So, he is under investigation when he got the DUI?
That's my understanding, yes, sir.
Is that correct?
I believe that they were still waiting on the actual notice of findings to come down, but the investigation itself had been completed. But there was no discipline had been served at that time.
So he was under investigation at the time he got a DUI, correct?
Yes, PSB had finished their investigation, but he was still.
But he's still under
the investigation. The technical definition of the investigation, yes, it had not been fully resolved.
Sir, may I ask, in reference to the marijuana incident where it says that evidence was not impounded and report was not written, what happened to those items?
They were actually thrown away in the trash can at the precinct, the vial.
Was an arrest made during that incident?
No, sir. There was a short discussion between me and my supervisor, and that was determined that no arrest was going to be made or tickets or citations.
So wait, why wasn't anything written against the suspect?
What's that, sir?
Why wasn't anything written against the subject of that case?
After a conversation with my supervisor, it was determined that he did not want anything done. He did not want an incident report to be completed, tickets, or any violations done.
No, I think what we're trying to get at is why was that decision made? Why did the sergeant not want something? Was it an illegal search?
I can't speak for myself and my sergeant at the time.
He didn't tell you why he felt it was an illegal search or anything along those lines? Or
no, he didn't. It was, no.
I can address that. That was part of the investigation because there was an allegation against the supervisor as well. That was ultimately unresolved. The supervisor, though, said that he did not feel, he felt that through the entire incident that there was justification for the stop, for the detention. So he did not believe that an illegal search took place.
Thank you.
Okay.
can I, Ms. Bacon, maybe you want to answer this instead of your client, but is it because you destroyed the evidence improperly is why there was no charges?
No, absolutely not.
I'm just trying to read into that, too. There's a piece missing in that puzzle.
I'm not entirely sure why it was. I do have the investigation, but that part of it was not addressed, but the decision not to arrest was made prior to any of that happening, and decision on the no charges.
I think one of the challenges here is the DUI is significant, and so I think it glosses over the first part of the case or the investigation. And I find myself wanting to ask more questions, I think, as many of the board members do, such as what was the cause for the stop? You know, what was the initial cause for the stop? Then after the initial cause for the stop, what led to what transpired next? In other words, how did we get to a point that there was a question asked about a driver's license? And then there's valid violations on the part of the person, so no tickets were written. So this is like, what did you dispo it out as? What did you dispo the case out as?
It was disposed as a. Are you asking me, sir? It was disposed as a no action.
Pulled over for a civil speeding violation, and there was no issue there. There were multiple officers on the scene. One of them had spotted a file of the looks of medical marijuana, and so that was cause for the detention.
And did we ask for a medical marijuana card in that case?
There was some confusion with that. I can't recall if it was. Was someone in there?
Colonel, if I may point you to paragraph 5 under the stipulated findings of fact in the consent agreement, that the respondent failed to inquire as to whether anyone could legally possess the marijuana that was located inside the vehicle.
Okay, so nobody asked that question of the subject of the stop?
No, Officer Guzman made the stop, but two other officers had the suspect exit the vehicle and conducted actual detention.
Was the subject in this stop ever handcuffed?
Yes.
They were handcuffed?
Yes. Was it by one of the other officers?
I don't recall who exactly did it.
Were they ever read their rights?
I believe so, sir. I can't recall exactly on that night.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, again, we're straying from what the respondent admitted to in the stipulated findings of fact, where it indicates that he was the one who placed the subject in handcuffs. It was the respondent who failed to inquire about the illegality or legality of the marijuana that was located. It was the respondent who failed to properly impound it, and it was the respondent who failed to properly write the report.
One of the concerns I have, Mr. Guzman and Ms. Bacon, which... Again, I know we're addressing the DUI here mainly, but this is important, I think, especially for an integrity board, is this is the finding of fact that PSB investigation of this incident sustained an allegation that the respondent had made an untrue statement to his supervisor. I know you did some clarification on that, but this is something you've agreed to, which is where the heart of this board is integrity. So I'm a little concerned on that. That's a finding of fact, Mr. Duran, correct?
Yes, sir.
That's alarming to us. I mean, so I guess I pose the question back to Mr. Duran, is the fact if we have a finding of fact of integrity, why 18 months, not a revocation?
Again, Mr. Chairman, I do not reach the conclusions about the discipline. I negotiate between the respondent and post.
Okay.
I could certainly defer to the director, but there has been a distinction made in when we attempt to settle cases between a...
Gino, let me... I'll take this.
Okay.
We're putting him on the spot, and this is a decision we make here on the staff side of the house. And Chairman, what we have done historically is we've made a clear delineation between a pre- and post-Garrity truthful statement. Although we look at them both as allegations and serious allegations, we make the distinction from revocation in a post-Garrity statement versus a pre-Garrity out on the road statement. Again, we still have issues with both of them, but we look at one a little bit differently than we do the other, and that's what we did in this case. And I apologize.
Mike Delton was the case, your compliance specialist. I guess he's unfortunately not here today, who could probably answer a lot of these questions. But keep in mind, the board always has you, but we try to settle these cases. We try to give what we believe is reasonable. If the board has an issue with what is in here and you're uncomfortable with it, you're always willing to reject them, and we can go back to the drawing board and take this case to an O hearing if that need be, or work with Ms. Bacon on a different consent agreement moving forward. It's really your choice.
And again, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot, or staff. It's just I was looking for an explanation possibly on that. And I understand misunderstanding, subjective thoughts, but obviously there was something that was sustained based on your own consent agreement here for finding the facts for integrity. And that's why I bring that up. So I was looking for a little clarification on that. So.
I'm curious. This is absent Mr. Guzman's case. I'm questioning whether we should go into an executive session about an issue with regard to these agreements that we're dealing with. For instance, this agreement that came about here, it's just like the one before it. These agreements are being put before us as a board, and I think there's some cause for pause on some of them. And I don't know if that's a discussion that needs to take place between the board and the director, absent Mr. Guzman's case, I think, just in general.
Is that something we can go into executive session for?
This is Monique Cody, the board's independent advisor. Colonel, we could certainly go into executive session. There might be some items we could discuss in the open. As your executive director has pointed out, it's entirely at the board's discretion whether to accept, reject, or modify. The one thing that for this one and for future ones that could be more clear would be on the suspension. I pause on how these dates are calculated. I know law enforcement agencies count their weeks and months differently than civilians do. But that would be something that we could discuss in open session, or we could go into executive session and discuss that as well.
This is more of a policy issue. This isn't to go into executive session to discuss Mr. Guzman. This is a question of policy and practice within AZ Post. That's why I'm asking.
Colonel, could we set that up maybe for the latter part and get through the cases, or would you want to do it before? Or should we set that up for a future agenda item? Because I think there's some concern just based on this conversation. But
I'll just say this. I'll go on record and say this. Here's my concern. You have somebody who comes before our board. We obviously have consternation with what's put before us. When this person comes before the board and there's a recommendation of a revocation for a period of time, this person comes in here with hope. Their belief is, I'm walking in here pretty much, this is an agreement. That's what this is an agreement. And then it's put before us and we approve or disapprove the agreement. Pretty much, this person's walking in here with hope that this is an agreement. And now they walk in here with that hope. This is his career and his livelihood. And we have pretty serious consternation on this case. And I think possibly even the case before it. So that's why I wanted to discuss it. But that's my take on it. This young man's come in here and laid it out for us, but that's my concern. So, not an executive session. I'll just make it public.
And I could add that in other cases, it has not been uncommon for this board to ask the executive director or Mr. Brachtel what the range of discipline that has been agreed to previously for these types of items. So that's something that is certainly available to the board as well, to look at each of these separately. You know what the range is for DUI. You deal with those all the time. But the range for this type of, the one about the untruthful statement. So I think that's that in this case. I think that's what is missing from other cases you've dealt with. That's been more difficult is you have asked the executive director or Mr. Brackel for advice on the range of discipline for this type of violation. So that might be something you could consider. If you would want to table this for the next meeting to get additional information, you could certainly direct staff to give you additional information if that's something you would like. You could wait until the investigator is present if you think that would be valuable as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
May I ask a couple questions?
You bet you can.
It sounds as if the director has some policy questions that he would like to maybe direct to our executive director and staff today. Is there any reason why we couldn't do that in executive session today?
Would it be under the request for legal advice for executive session? Would it be to request that myself and the director and Mr. Brackel answer policy questions as it relates to compliance with the AZ Post rules and statutes?
Well, inevitably it would, to some extent.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Brackel, if I can interject, because I've been listening, and I can, as your legal counsel, I can share historically. So I believe that the colonel's questions are directly related to legal, to the law, and to the application of the rules, administrative rules, and interpretation of your laws. And in my opinion, that would certainly be grounds to go into executive session so that you and your IA can have, for this case, can have a candid discussion how the policy questions interrelate with the law. And I think that's grounds for executive session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brackel. Does this body want to move into executive session? I mean, I'm not opposed to it. It's totally up to you all if you want to do that and have this discussion. If you wish, we can do that, and we'll go into a motion.
I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
So I second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. All in favor? See what I'm saying? Aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion carries.